All right, there we are.
Okay,
Hi,
hello.
how are you?
I'm so good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Look at, we have Mr. Wallace with us. Is
I
it
know.
Wallace or what? Wait, I think I got it wrong. I do
It's
this every time.
Wallace. It's
Wallace.
okay. It's
It's
Wallace Wyatt the third.
Wallace E. Wyatt the
Wyatt,
third.
Wallace. Yeah, and you know what's
Yes.
so bad about this, Wallace? I cannot tell you how many times we have had guests on and I get their name wrong and they're like, yeah, you knew it 5 minutes ago. I think as soon as we hit record, it's like,
As soon
wait,
as we
what's
hit
going on
record,
here?
all brain cells just
They just
flee.
evaporate. They're gone. Well, I've
we're
been
glad.
told that I have two. I've been told that I have two first names and two last names, so it really doesn't bother me.
But you're like Wallace, Wyatt, Wyatt, Wallace. I don't know. Well, we're glad you are here. It's been, I feel like, over a month that we've had to wait to get you on. So this is really exciting to have you here.
You look
Thank
so
you.
nice. Thank you
You
so
look
much
so
for
handsome.
you
Yes.
really dressed up on a Saturday morning. I am just like in awe. I
I'm
really appreciate it. I'm
so excited.
sorry that,
Ladies.
yeah, I look like I just rolled out of bed.
It's
Okay.
okay.
So I love the story behind how you guys met, and I want to hear more. I want you guys to kind of take the listeners through, or the watchers, if they're watching on YouTube, but I want you guys to take us through how you guys met. And how we got to where we are today with Wallace being on Big Girl Pants podcast.
Okay, so I'm going to start, but I'm going to stop and let Wallace pick it up and tell the rest.
Deal.
Most Fridays, my team and I go to lunch. And so this particular Friday, we chose Shack. What is it? Shell Shack in Plano. And we're sitting there having a good time. We definitely usually partake in a few beers or drinks of some sort. And this day we definitely did. Most everyone had left, excluding Ryan and I. We were the last ones left. I think maybe there was one other. And he as soon as we pushed ourselves upon Wallace, I think he chose to leave. But Ryan saw him sitting there, and right before he was there was another gentleman sitting there. Had the same color shirt on and sitting in the exact same spot. So she made a comment like, how much are you gonna eat? Because this other guy had also ordered like this ginormous plate of food. And so he had ordered the big, what is it, Wallace? What is that you ordered?
I ordered 2 pounds of crabs, a half
Yeah.
a pound of shrimp, two
He was
pieces
doing
of
it big
corn, a
for
bunch of
sure.
sausage and
Going big.
potatoes.
He was going big. Big plate of food. And so she's like, my gosh, how much are you going to eat? Well, then she invites him to come sit with us. And he's like, no, I'm good. Like, I'm having a good time here by myself. She takes that as, oh, well, we should just come to you then. So she gets up and goes and sits at his table. And I'm like, okay, wow. I was so embarrassed, but I stood at the end of the table. Like, I didn't even sit for a, oh, I don't know if I ever did, but I stood at the end of the table for a while. And then we just, I'm going to let him take it from there because
Okay,
we got into
yes.
some good conversations.
So yes, Kim is right. That's exactly what happened. Ryan looked at me and she said, "Well, how much are you going to eat today?" And I'm thinking to myself, "Oh, I don't think that she believes that I can actually eat all of this food." I had worked all day and it was just a typical payday Friday. I'm like, "You know what?
I'm gonna
I think
treat
I'm going to treat
yourself.
myself
Yep.
tonight to a nice big dinner and
By
enjoy myself."
myself with no disruptions or distractions.
Right.
I'm
The
gonna
only
eat
thing
all
I
this
had,
seafood right here.
right. The only thing I
Yep.
had eaten was two bowls of cereal. So I was going big, go big or go home.
Yeah.
And Ryan looks and she says, "Hey, well, you can come and join us." And I'm like, "Well, you know, I just opened up my food and I'm already eating. My hands are dirty. It'd be a lot to pick up all of this and move over there."
Right.
Uh, so I stayed at my table and she said, "Well, I'm going to come join you." "Okay, great. Come on over." And I let her know, "Please excuse me if you know you get a little crab juice on you. I'm from Florida. I don't believe in using all of these gloves and bibs. I'm just diving straight in."
Yeah,
Uh,
right.
also, I'm
Wow.
in the zone. Like, I'm literally in the zone. I'm about to go ham on all of this crab. Thank you.
Right.
So she came over at her own risk, and the next thing you know, we probably had conversations for what, nearly 2 hours, two and a
Oh,
half hours. Yeah,
wow.
it was beautiful conversation.
It was good. It was very, very good.
All
Yeah.
right. I want to hear more about that. What was the conversation about?
Oh, first it was basic get to know you conversation. Hey, where are you from? What do you do? Are you married? Do you have children? And then from there, we really started talking about our faith. Okay. I learned so much about Ryan and Kim and their faith journeys and vice versa. And next thing you know, a lot of laughter, a lot of tears, just great, great, great conversation.
Yeah, okay. It was very authentic. So I think what captured us primarily was your story, your journey. And then once we knew kind of what your journey was and how you got to where you are today, then we were so inspired by that. And I think that's what kind of led us to feel like it was okay to share what we were thinking and feeling with our own personal spiritual journey. So start there if you don't mind, and just share a little bit about who you are and what led you to Dallas. Because, and then of course we can dive into our conversation at that table, but I just feel like it's so much more fruitful if everybody can get a little bit of a foundation of who you are as a person first.
Yeah, definitely. So I don't know where to start. So I'll start at the beginning.
I was born.
So my birthday is.
So I was born on Saturday, February the 4th, 1995.
That's awesome.
My mom was 19 years old and my dad was 17. And I was born a month, 10 days early. Oh, wow. And the doctors told my parents that I could, because of my premature birth, I could face paralysis on the left side of my body. I could possibly be blind in my left eye and maybe even deaf in my left ear. So from there, life goes on. And about 6 months old, my mom says, okay, I didn't sign up for this. I don't want to be a parent. I'm not ready yet. She continued her street life, if you would. Packed up me and my father's things and kicked us out. Wow. So my dad ended up doing everything he had to do to make sure I was taken care of. Around about 3 years old, he had gotten married to his first wife. Everything started off great. She was who I grew up knowing to be my mom. So when everyone asked, you know, I would always tell them I have two moms. I have my mom that is raising me and my biological mom, who I call Mama Locke. Locke was my mom's street name. So that's how I distinguished the difference between the two ladies. And eventually my dad, his first wife, and I, with my younger brother and sister, we moved to Tallahassee. And that's where things started getting shaky between my dad's first wife and I. She became, in my opinion, she had always been kind of verbally abusive. No matter how much good I would do, I would always be stupid. So I learned to just be quiet, and I began to stay to myself around certain people because I felt as if my voice didn't have a lot of meaning or carry a lot of weight. No one wanted to hear what I had to say. And eventually she became physically abusive. One day I had gotten in trouble in school and I had gotten placed on punishment. And for me, my punishment was you stay in your room unless you have to go to the bathroom. You read books all day. So eventually reading makes you sleepy, and I fell asleep and slept through dinner. So I wanted to eat dinner well after dinner time. And I went into the kitchen and she heard me in the kitchen. And as I was grabbing a plate out of the cabinet, she came and she slammed my arm in the cabinet. And from there, our relationship just declined and declined and declined. Wow. Eventually, we moved back to Florida. Her and my dad began to go through a lot of strange things in their relationship and their marriage. Her and I continued to fight. We got into our first physical altercation when I was in the seventh grade. So things just got worse and worse, and the abuse just got greater. But eventually, her and my father divorced. My father ended up marrying my former middle school teacher. So she's now my stepmom. Beautiful, great woman. I actually introduced them to one another. I locked her outside of her classroom and forced her to talk to my dad.
Oh!
So they ended up, yeah, she was who I confided in while at school. She connected me to a lot of resources. And she just became that listening ear. So she was one of the first people I felt like I could talk to. But once her and my father had gotten married, that kind of changed, of course. But throughout that entire journey, I had my grandmother and great grandmother. And they constantly kept me in church and introduced me to church. So some other things had begun to transpire circulating around my father's divorce. I fell into a really deep depression because the woman who I knew to grow up being my mom when her and my dad got divorced, she stood in front of me in the kitchen and she said, "At this point on in life, you are nothing more than a house guest of mine. And at any given moment, I can kick you out." And I said to her, "You know what? Save yourself the trouble and the hassle of kicking me out. I'm moving." And I moved with my mother's mom. I tried to move with my mom, but her husband, he said, "No, I don't want a reckless teenager living in my house." So I was forced to live with my grandmother. Now, my grandmother, she's from South Carolina. At the time, I want to say she was in her late 70s. No central air and heat. Still used the clothesline, ironed once a week, and cooked every day like it was Sunday. So good, bad, ups and downs. And eventually I started failing school because grandma wasn't able to help me with my homework. I remember in the 10th grade, I had 5 Fs. That was the first time ever that I had ever received an F. Not only was it one, but it was multiple. So there were so many things going on in my 10th grade life.
I want to stop for just two seconds. So people who are listening, do not leave this conversation because I need you to hear where this ends or where it is presently. Obviously, it doesn't end there, but I need people to stay with us because they have to hear what you're doing now.
So I'm like so engulfed in this story right now. I feel like
I'm so like, oh my God. Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, I'm probably about 75% done. So just hold on. I promise. So now with grandma and experiencing all kinds of depression, girlfriend issues, had just lost my virginity. Young lady lies and says that I raped her. So dealing with that. So now I'm depressed. I feel like life is over. I am done. So I contemplate suicide 3 different times. 2 times I actually acted and failed miserably. Thankfully now. But the 3rd time I just couldn't gather up the strength to do what I had planned. And one day I was coming home from school and I got off of the city bus in front of my great grandmother's home as I was preparing to walk to the home of my mother's mom where I lived. And when I got off of the bus, my great grandmother, she was standing in her front yard with a rake and she called me to her and she grabbed me by my chin and she said, "Trey." Trey was a family nickname that my family had given me for being the 3rd.
The 3rd, yeah.
So she looked at me and she said, "Trey, I want you to know that there are no stupid people in my family. Anybody with the last name Wyatt, they're not stupid. But there are a lot of people in our family that have made stupid mistakes. And this time you just so happen to be one of them. But every day that you wake up, I want you to know that God has given you another chance at life to get things right." So she said, "From this day forth, I want you to go and be everything that you want to be." And that was the last conversation we had ever had. For me, that conversation was so impactful because when she called me Trey, she identified that little boy in me that was hurting. And she reminded him that it was okay to grow up and be Wallace. Do what you want to do for yourself. And after her death, I'm just longing for someone that I can unapologetically talk to without judgment. And I couldn't find that. But I remembered that the one place she always took me to and introduced me to was church. No matter what her other grandchildren or great-grandchildren were doing, whenever she was at church, I was required to be right there next to her. So I went back to church, gave my life to Christ, went through, finished high school as a senior class president, went on to Bethune-Cookman University in Daytona Beach, Florida, graduated summa cum laude, and got a full scholarship to attend SMU now, working on my Master of Divinity. So that's it.
Oh, great. That's not it. That is not it. He's also written a book.
Yes, I have written a book.
You wrote a book?
Yes. And in the midst of writing two more, the first book is called He's Worth the Wait, and it's W-E-I-G-H-T.
Yeah.
I basically tell the 10 hardest chapters of my life and how I used my faith to overcome those issues. For me, writing was a way to communicate and get my feelings out on paper without hurting myself or being rejected by others after my great-grandmother had passed. And after I'd write, even I'd ball it up, unravel it, tear it into little pieces. And then as time went on, I found myself writing letters. I found the Minister Wallace in me writing letters to the little boy Trey in me. So I used my older self to heal my hurting younger self.
So I did download your book. I haven't read it yet. I'm in the middle of getting my master's degree, and I've got a full load this semester.
Oh, yes.
And so, and in addition to that, we started a book club at the office. And so I actually haven't even had a chance to read it yet. And I'm so sad because I can't wait to read it.
It's It's definitely next on the list.
I can't wait to read that book.
Yeah, that's so amazing.
Yeah. And so how did you got to Dallas because of SMU? That's what brought you to Dallas?
Yep. SMU and work. I work for a nonprofit organization, After School All-Stars, and that's how I met my stepmom. She was one of my youth counselors in the program. And with the program, I was a student, volunteered, got hired in the 10th grade, and have been working with them since. So it was easy for me to relocate to Dallas, rather, and then transfer my job.
Okay, so they have a chapter here. Is that what it is?
Yes. Oh, yeah, we have 19 chapters.
Wow, that's impressive. And you've been with them for so long. Share with everyone, if you're okay with it, how old you are.
Yes, I am 25. I will be 26 in February.
I know. Wow. When he told me that, I was like, the wisdom in this man is so far beyond 25 years on this planet. I mean, if you would have told me 40, I wouldn't believe it physically, but I would have been like, yeah, he just looks good for his age. Because everything that was coming out of your mouth didn't align with a 25-year-old human.
Yeah. So I have a question. So with all the stuff that was going on with your stepmom, where was your dad? Like, why wasn't your dad hey, stop treating my kid like shit, you know?
So my dad, for most of my life, he has driven 18-wheelers. Let me not say for most of my life he has driven 18-wheelers. For most of my life, he has not been physically present because of his job.
Okay.
And because of that, you know, moving with, he works for United Van Lines. So he travels all across the United States of America, driving and relocating others. So most of the time he wasn't home. Definitely has been a great provider. But of course, there were other aspects of life like that protection and teaching me the things of manhood, if you would, that I like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how do you learn from someone who's not there?
Yeah. You know, and that's a struggle that we have now. You know, just in total transparency, this book has caused a lot of turmoil in my family.
I've heard that.
Welcome to our lives.
Hi, yeah. Actually, you're right. When we started the podcast, April was receiving quite a bit of negative comments just on the content that we were talking about.
And just for telling my story, pretty much.
Yeah.
Her story. And so she knows what that's like. And other authors that we've, you know, had on that are telling stories personal to their lives know that that's a common theme. And
you know, what I've come to the realization is no one knows your truth but you.
Yeah.
You know, if you've been absent, how can you tell me what I've experienced?
Exactly.
So now that one of my uncles who I spoke to, he called me. He read the entire book in about a night. And he called me and he said, you know what, nephew, what you have done is, it's kind of like a wound. Mm-hmm. When you have a cut on your arm, you get the scab heals, your skin comes back. That's what happened for you by you writing this book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he said, with the family, what happens is they had to scab and they put makeup over the scab. And they thought that that makeup was their skin. But by you writing this book, you wiped off the makeup, found the scab, and you literally ripped it off.
and poured salt in your truth.
Yep. So they're hurting. And I do understand.
Right.
But what I need them to understand, this is not a quote unquote expose. This is me sharing my story because there are millions of people, I'm sure. I know for sure that of the hundreds of maybe even the thousands of kids that I worked with, a lot of them can identify with my story.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So I know that sharing my story has the ability to help somebody else.
Absolutely, 100%. And it's so courageous of you to take that leap because you write that knowing. Well, writing it is one thing, publishing it is another. And making it public, right? And doing that, especially being so young, just knowing that, you know, the flack you're going to get, for lack of a better word, it's that's difficult. And, you know, a lot of people just don't have that courage.
Right.
It takes a lot to expose.
It does.
That's not an expose, but to expose the wounds that way when you're ready for it, but they're not. Not even that they weren't ready. They weren't even aware. Like there wasn't even an awareness around.
And, you know, I struggle even with the awareness portion because every chapter that I wrote about, that I shared, because there's tons that I did not share, but everything that I talked about, I tried having those conversations, but no one would listen. So now,
and I'm sure they were like super dismissive and they're like, no, that's a long time ago. Why are you bringing that stuff up? And you're like, because I'm still affected. I'm still affected by it. And I need to talk about it, to talk through it so I can get over it. But if you guys aren't going to listen, that's cool. I'll just write a book.
You know, unfortunately, it came to that point, and now, you know, I have everybody's attention.
Right.
Love
Hey, remember that time you didn't want to talk to me? Gotcha.
Yeah.
There we go.
So are you in Dallas alone? Do you have any family members here?
I do have some family members here, but I purposely stay distant.
Yeah.
That's the best way to put it.
and don't misinterpret what I'm saying. I mean, I love my family, but I think that it's very much like a, what do you say? I feel like now as an adult, I'm turning 33 today, and it took me, because your prefrontal cortex is not fully developed until you're almost 30. So it's like you don't really start making really sound decisions and stuff like that until you're older, at least mid-20s, which I'm sure you're experiencing now too. But so as I've gotten older, I've been able to selectively choose who I keep close.
Yeah.
And for everyone else, like, I love you, but I have to love you from a distance.
Yeah.
And like, just to keep my own sanity. And whether or not I feel like I'm an actual member of my family, like, that's beside the point. You know, I love you. I will support you, but please don't be upset with me if I don't want to partake in the same activities that you partake in. Or,
and that is the exact way that I feel.
Yeah.
I love you all. However, for my safety and my sanity, it's best that we have our distance right now.
100%.
And then there's me, April, me and my family, like, we're all within 5 miles of each other. They're all here every single weekend.
Weekend.
Zero distance.
So Shapiro has learned the fine art of communicating with the people as a means of maintaining her sanity.
Right. I'm very candid. I'm not afraid of the word no. I'm not afraid of hurting anyone's feelings with the word no, because I realized that's their boundary, not mine.
Right.
So, or lack thereof. So, So I get it. So you shared something with us that night, and I would love to talk about that, but I also don't want to cross the boundary with you. So, you shared something about someone that you were dating, and I love that story. Are you okay sharing that?
Yeah. I'm just not 100% sure which story I shared about what relationship that.
I think it's your girlfriend now.
Oh, okay. Now I know exactly what you're talking about. So I was 12 years old, and I have a cousin who lives back in Florida. And when we were little, she had a best friend, and she went to my aunt, her mom, and she said, "Hey, I want to go over to Cheyenne's house for the weekend." And my aunt was like, "No, your cousin came to spend time with you. You're not going anywhere. The only way you're going is if Wallace is going too." So of course she comes and she asks me, hey, do you want to join me? No, I'm playing video games all weekend with your brother. Leave me alone. That's it. And she says, well, I'll cook breakfast. Oh, now we can talk because you're going to feed me. Yeah, let's go. So we go over to her friend's house and I see this beautiful young lady coming down the stairs. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to marry her one day. And next thing you know, my cousin's best friend ends up becoming my best friend. And we go throughout the rest of middle school, beginning of high school together, and just great friends. Never crossed any relationship boundaries, if you would. But she was always the first person I spoke to every morning, the last person I talked to at the end of my days. We would sometimes skip our own extracurricular band activities to go support the other. Both of us were in the band. So some nights she'd be at my football games and I'd see this young lady dancing across the field and I know exactly who it is. And she texts me, did you see me? And I'm like, let me make sure nobody's looking. Text her back, yeah, I saw you. So beautiful friendship. And we get to 10th grade and we decide, all right, let's try a relationship now. The best 2-month relationship of my life. It was so short-lived simply because she had gotten into some issues with her family that caused her to get kicked out of her home. And her life went spiraling downhill quickly. And I had heard nothing from her. And then towards the end of my junior year, summer before senior year, my cousin reaches out and she's like, hey, I'm thinking about going to the pool this weekend. Let's go to the pool. So I'm like, all right, cool. And next thing you know, her best friend appears. And I'm like, oh my God, where have you been all of these years? What's going on? What has happened? And she's just a totally different person now. And I'm like, something's odd. What's going on here? And she just would never tell me the situation. But I'm like, no, I know you too well. You're not your normal self. What is going on? And she says, you know what, Wallace, I promise you I'm going to call you tonight. She never calls. My cousin calls me a couple of days later, come to find out she's been arrested. And I'm like, no, this can't be. What is going on? And sure enough, I turn on the TV. She's on every news station. Oh. And I'm like, what is going on? So I get all of the necessary information and I write her a letter. And at the end of my letter, I said, please don't respond, because if you respond, I'm forced to face this reality. And sure enough, she responded. And I'm like, oh my goodness. So we continue talking and she ends up going to trial in our senior year of high school and gets sentenced to 20 years in prison. And I'm like, oh, life as I know it is just, ugh. And she was just, you know, she was the sweetest person ever, but hanging out with the wrong people at the wrong time. And it cost her a good chunk of our lives. So we continue talking and we have our moments where we just go without talking at all. And thankfully, December of 2018, we reconnected and we talked faithfully every weekend before I moved to Dallas. From December up until August, I just constantly went to visit her. So now we're back at the old place that we used to be, two peas in a pod, and that's my girl. And like I told Kim, that's who I still intend to marry one day.
I love that. Any chance, we talked about this, I don't remember the answer. Any chance of her getting out early?
Not to my knowledge, not right now. However, it is something we're still fighting for.
So she was 17 when she was, or 18?
I want to say 17. I think we had just turned 17.
So 38. Nothing wrong with getting married at 38 and starting a family.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I love that story. I love your loyalty. I mean, and do you know what a difference you're making in her life right now? I mean, just what that is for her, and just to know that you're out here, just existing in the real world on her behalf, sort of, that's got to be so meaningful to her.
It's been a challenge, you know. There are many days that, of course, we blissfully go off and just dwell in our thoughts of a future together. And then some days it's really hard for her to imagine a future outside of incarceration. So it's a lot of extension of grace on both parts, because some days it's extremely hard for me. You know, I can't just pick up the phone and call her. I mean,
or it's even easier see for her. Like,
We have not seen each other in almost a year now, simply because of me being here and then also now COVID. So it's been a challenge. I think the last time I saw her was on New Year's Day.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah, COVID. I'm so done with COVID. I need it to go away. I need it
very much so.
I need it to go away. I know we all need it to go away. So right now you're in school for, is it master's program? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. I am in my last year of my Master of Divinity.
Okay. And then after that, are you just going to become a pastor, or do you then go get your PhD or doctorate, or what do you do?
You know, that's a very weighted question that I don't have the full answer to yet. I didn't want to share this publicly yet, but since you asked, I will. On Tuesday or Wednesday morning, I did get accepted into the Doctorate of Ministry program at the Perkins School of Theology at SMU.
You're
so I will be.
You're such a hero. You.
Thank you.
Shapiro's so like, you're I my will inspiration. Be.
You're doing so many amazing things at such a young age, coming out of the background that you had. The cards were stacked against you. I mean,
100%.
That's the thing. It's like at the end of the day, most don't have this same story with that same journey.
Yeah.
And I just love stories like that. I didn't tell you, congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you.
So huge. I didn't share this. I don't think I did when we were at the table that night, but I actually had a child when I was 17 years old. Did I tell you that?
I don't think so.
Sharing that. So my oldest daughter was born on the first day of my senior year in high school. And sadly, at 17, I wasn't concerned about being mom. I was concerned about, you know, am I going to get kicked off the cheerleading squad? Am I going to be able to finish high school? Literally, those were the things that were in my mind because I was 17 years old. I was a dumb kid. So,
you were not dumb. You were a regular 17-year-old. That's what we worry about at that age.
I got myself in that situation, so I'm going to go ahead and label that dumb. But anyway, my ex-husband now, but at the time we were not married, he decided that he was going to come in and get her and raise her for the first year until I could graduate. So for the first year, I didn't even have her. And, you know, finally we did reunite at the end of that process and we got married for a little while. But anyway, yeah, so I was on WIC, which is like women in, I don't know if anybody knows what that is, but that's where you put cheese and milk and formula and things like that. I was so poor. We had no money at all. And I just didn't even think college was a possibility ever. I mean, we were struggling just to even put groceries on the table and feed ourselves, much less consider college. So I don't think I had the exact same situation because yours started much, much younger and continued beyond. But I do know a lot of girls that were in that situation. They just kind of fell into a life of poverty and a life of bad choices. And
you know, college wasn't initially in my plans. In full transparency, I didn't want to go to college. It was my desire to stay home with grandma and continue helping raise my three younger siblings. I had literally devised a plan to get the four of us to run off and start a new life. But my guidance counselor in high school, she's like, Wallace, what can you really provide for them without anything more than a high school education?
Right.
And I was like, you know what? I need to go to school. Yeah. And that was even tough. It caused more issues, if you would, you know. My dad, he wanted me. Yeah. My dad, he wanted me to start driving trucks with him. He wanted to build an empire. Yeah. He wanted to build an empire in the trucking industry. And I said to him, I respect what you do. However, that's not how I desire to spend the rest of my life. But I promise you that if you send me to college and you pay for my education, and if you want to still start that business, I will run the logistical side of the business, handle all of the business affairs, and you handle all of the trucking, and we can make it work. And he said, no, that's not what I want. So I said, okay, well, I'm going to school anyway. So he paid $4,000 of my undergraduate education out of pocket for my freshman year. And then going into my second year, he refused to give me the necessary information for financial aid. Thankfully, I was on internship with the chairman of the board of trustees at the time, who made a few phone calls, and that's how my undergraduate education was paid for. All of my funding from undergrad came from the president's discretionary funding pot.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So what changed? Earlier you were saying when you were in high school, like you had F's and, you know, you were struggling because you didn't have anyone to help you. And how did you change? How did that trajectory change from like F's to like, I'm qualifying for college now?
I went from one grandmother's house to the other. So most of the reason I was failing school was simply not because I didn't understand the material part. Well, in part that was, but a lot of it was because I was really depressed and just had no motivation. And my grandmother, who was in her late 70s, early 80s, if I'm not mistaken, she didn't go to school beyond the ninth grade. You know, she grew up in South Carolina on a farm. So at some point in time, education was no longer an option for her. It was time for her to get in the fields and work to provide for her family. So she wasn't really able to help me on my homework. And it was then my dad's mom who connected me to a tutor. And then she said, you know what, why don't you just come and live with me and we'll go ahead and make sure you get everything that you need. So when I relocated to my dad's mom, I got back on track. And, you know, she was on me. She made sure that I did everything I needed to do and I had everything I needed to have in order to make it through high school and even throughout college. You know, she sacrificed a lot to make sure that I had everything I needed.
She was the support you needed. And the stability and the structure.
So what advice do you have, Wallace? When I think about your story and I think about all of these kids out there, you know how teenagers are. I mean, we all were one. You mentor them now. Kids think that every single thing that's happening right now, real time today, is the end all be all of, you know, their future, their life. Like, you know, everything is crumbling. There's no way I'm ever going to get past this. Look what you've done and look at the journey. You're just starting, you know, you're still so young and you've got so much ahead of you. What advice do you give young people who are struggling right now and think that it's all over and there's nowhere to go from here?
2014, I preached my first sermon and it came from Romans 8:28. And we know all things work together for the good of them that love God and are called according to his purpose for them in Christ. We all have to realize that everything in life, it really does work together for our benefit if we allow God to be God. A lot of the issues that I realized that I had was simply because I tried taking matters into my own hands. You know, there were many times that I systematically retaliated against my dad's ex-wife. I purposely planned the demise of their relationship. I purposely connected my dad to his new wife. And though things are pretty, there are a lot of issues that came with that as well. So one, allow God to be God and know that you have purpose. And two, you got to really, really, really accept who you are, accept your truth, and don't allow anybody to take that from you. There's so many people that, you know, in some cases grow up in wealth and in other cases grow up in poverty. You have the power to determine if you stay in wealth or if you stay in poverty. So for me, my dad makes great money. He did everything he could to make sure my siblings and I were provided for. So wealth wasn't necessarily an issue. However, there were other areas of my life where we were very poor in. You know, I didn't have that loving father, if you would, that I could go to and he could wrap his arms around me and comfort me and encourage me to be a young man. So I made up in my mind that every young person that I come in contact with, that is what I'm going to do. I'm going to attempt to be the father that I wish that I had. And you know, a lot of my students, they don't call me Mr. Wallace. They call me Dad. Yeah. I have one young lady who now lives in Jacksonville, Florida. When we first met, she was anti anything affectionate. And now we probably talk all day, every day. And she sent me a screenshot of something the other day. And at the top, you could see that I had just texted her. And in her phone, my name is Father Wallace with a red heart emoji. And it just blew my mind to know that this is the impact that I had on someone. We spent two years of our lives together, and now we're very couple of hundred, maybe 1,000 or so miles from each other. And this is still the impact that I have on this young lady.
Changing lives, my friend.
Yeah. And that's the struggle too, is like with your dad, you know, we can't change people, right? Like,
right.
I tell my dad all the time, and we have a pretty good relationship now. He's had terminal cancer since like 2017, and that's really changed his perspective on life. Mm-hmm. And he's been listening and more receptive. But for you, like, you know, even if you go to your dad and say, Dad, this is what I need, that doesn't mean that he's going to automatically flip a switch and provide that for you, right?
And truthfully, he has made it his business not to do so.
Right.
As I said, he has the means to do so, but he freely chooses not to.
Right. And the same thing with like your birth mom, like, mm-hmm. right? Like what's that relationship like now?
I find it ironic because the relationship I have with my mom now is the relationship that I once had with my dad, and vice versa. My mom and I are actually now what I would say the best of friends. She's one of my biggest supporters. I think me relocating to Dallas was one of the greatest things that could have ever happened for my mom and I's relationship. I think for some time I was really hurt and used every chance possible to remind her, you were not here for me. You have no say so in what I do in my life.
You abandoned me.
Yeah. And one day I was sitting and it came to my realization. She didn't know how to be a mom, and it's okay. I have to meet her where she is if she's willing to meet me where I am.
Yes. God, that's huge. So yeah. Wise. Wallace the sage. Get out of here.
We challenged each other, you know. I told her, you know, I've made a lot of decisions in my life. And in my opinion, a lot of those decisions have been great decisions. If you just accept me where I am, we can work to accept one another and build a relationship. And now we talk literally every day and have a great relationship.
Would you say that like letting go of any like expectations or preconceived notions around these people have like benefited your relationship?
Very much so. You know, everybody has an expectation of what a mom or a dad should be. But my parents were nowhere near, if you would, that expectation. So I've learned to literally meet them where they are and make the best of what I have. And when I did that, that's when we were able to grow together.
Well, and think about it too, Wallace, your advice to young people is to just be okay with who you are. Know who you are, be okay with who you are, kind of meet yourself there. But same thing is with the people that are around you. Mm-hmm. You really don't have any control over their behaviors or their own past and demons. And so you have to meet them where they are as well. Mm-hmm. You can accept yourself and you can accept them. That's when you can heal and move forward. So I love that. That's beautiful. What is next for you outside of school? Do you have a church that you're partnered with as far as like preaching, or I mean, do you have, what does that all look like for you? Because I know you need to be like the pastor of the church for sure.
So I am very active in my home church back in Orlando, Florida.
Okay.
My pastor and I, we probably have a check-in once a week, if not once a week, definitely no more than every 3 weeks. So very, very active in my home church, Christ Dominion Church of God in Orlando, Florida. I don't have a church here in Dallas that I attend, but it's not for a lack of searching, if you would. Yeah. And because I'm in my last year of seminary, I am I'm on an internship and I'm required to preach at least two times each semester. So if everything goes as planned, the fourth Sunday of this month, I'll be preaching at Wheatland United Methodist Church.
Okay. Oh my gosh, that's my grandparents' church.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Oh my gosh, it's so amazing.
You need to
go. Oh my God, I'm totally going to cry now. I almost cried like twice. Now I'm really going to cry. I grew up in that church. That's my grandparents' church. My mom got married at that church twice. How amazing is that? That is so cool. It's
very
like one
world.
Of the oldest churches. It's like a national, it's a landmark because it was built in like 1898, I think.
Sounds about right.
That is so cool. Oh, I'm totally coming to that for sure.
Good. I need to know. Where is it? Where's Wheatland?
It's in Duncanville. It's like, yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so awesome.
What date is that?
As a matter of fact, once we finish up our recording, I'm actually going to call the pastor to make sure that I'm actually going to be preaching.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if you are, and everything's solidified, let us know because we'd love to come and hear you.
We will totally be there.
Preaching, you're a natural born teacher. It's natural. It's just a part of who you are. It emotes, right?
So and believe it or not, I do not like public speaking at all.
That's where I'm just going to go with this. Like, fight that fight, man, because you have so much to share to a crowd. You know, you've got so much passion and courage, and it's just people are craving that. I hope that you can, well, if you're going to preach, you're going to be public speaking.
Yes. But you also have a great disposition. Like, you can just tell, like, and a great demeanor, like just talking to you, it's very organic. It's very natural. Like, you don't seem to be someone who's putting on airs. Like, that's the best part, is that people can relate to you. And that's important when you're a leader, because people want to follow someone that they feel like understands them and their story too.
I totally agree with that. And I also think too, like, you know, the one gift, given any gifts from COVID, it is the ability for people to recognize the power of being remote and still staying connected. So that's a whole new, it's not like a new platform, but I think it's just got more recognition and people now see, all right, we can Zoom, we can, you know, there's so many ways of connecting with people via our computers now. So there's that outlet as well. If you struggle with the whole public speaking thing, just get on camera and speak and put it on social media. People will listen to you. They will follow you.
Thank you. Thank you.
They will.
Thank you so much for being on our podcast.
I know.
I love that Shapiro's, I love that Ryan just walked up to you and just buttered her way into your delicious Friday night meal.
I mean, yeah, we actually never really got into that. We've got like 10 minutes, 9 minutes that we can share a little bit about that dialogue. But really, it was Ryan and I both sharing that we are both a little bit disconnected from faith. For me, religion, like for me, it's just all about religion. Like, I am still very, very spiritually based. You know, I still pray and I still, you know, Taylor, my daughter, laughs at me all the time. She thinks I pick and choose from, you know, what I deem acceptable under the Christian umbrella or what I think is, you know, appropriate for me to believe in. And really what I try to tell her is, no, God is God. He is the supreme and he is the one that, you know, that I follow and pray to. But Jesus Christ to me is, I believe he was put here to show us how to be humans, how to live and how to be good people. So there's some things that I struggle with under Christianity. Like, do I believe that we're all going to hell if we don't believe that he's the Son of God, and be really honest? I struggle with that. I do. But I absolutely have a relationship with Jesus Christ. And my daughter's like, you can't do that. You have to either, you know, you believe one or you believe the other.
It's either all or nothing, Mom. It's all or nothing.
Not in my head. It's not. So there's that. But yeah, so I struggle with the religion aspect, but the relationship piece, we good. If that makes any sense at all.
For sure.
It does. It makes perfect sense to me. You know, I say this quite often, and there are a lot of churches that only focus on the religion aspect. rather than that relationship. And I think that's what makes it so hard for me to find a church here in the area and really connect, because at my home church, we have both. We value the religion, but we really focus on the relational aspect.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I struggled. I was at a church for 12 years or so and very much involved. I was in the theater program. My kids grew up in that church. Many, many friendships built and cultivated in that church. But now I'm not really affiliated with a church. And it's because of all the doctrine. Like, I don't want somebody to dictate and mandate and tell me what my relationship with Christ should be like.
Or should look like. Yeah.
I think we as a church, we have to be careful with that, because when I look back at my story, I've been in church literally my entire life.
Yeah.
But at 12 years old, I made the conscious decision to leave the church because there was a minister who she called me a man of God, and I'm a 12-year-old boy. And she told me that I could not call the other men in the church men of God, because every man is not a man of God. She didn't take the time to explain that to me. So I said, you know what? If they can't be men of God, I don't want to be a man of God. Yeah. But 4 years later, of course, I ended up running back to the church.
Yeah, I love that. So we are almost out of time. Anything you want to share? How can people find you? I have a feeling people are going to want to follow you.
And your book.
And follow your story. Yes.
Plug your book.
How do people get your book? Hold it up again so people can see it.
And say the title.
So the title is He's Worth the Wait, and it's W-E-I-G-H-T, not W-A-I-T.
And you have a website. What's that website?
Yes. The website is www.ww3ministries.com.
Sweet.
And are you very active on social media? Like, do videos and anything like that, or?
I'm not nearly as active as I once have been, simply because, like you, I'm working on a master's and I'm in my final year on internship, full-time job, just a lot of different moving pieces, and also attempting to write 3 books at once. So got a lot of moving pieces going on. But if someone sends me a message or something, I will respond. Facebook, just my full name, Wallace Wyatt III. And then Instagram, it's not minister, it's men, M-I-N underscore Wyatt, W-Y-A-T-T-I-I-I.
Okay.
So
when you, if you find him on Facebook, and he decides to be your friend, you just scroll down and read his post after he met Ryan and I. Oh my, it's a wonderful post. It was very lovely, but I was like, I am an embarrassment.
I can't wait. I can't wait to read it. I'm about to go find it.
My husband is like, Kimberly Shapiro. I was like, what? I mean, I don't know.
Beautiful because I went to dinner with one intention. And I think the most beautiful thing about Christianity is you don't have to tell everybody you're a Christian.
Yeah.
They should be able to see it by the lifestyle that you live. I was literally sitting,
I love that,
trying to enjoy my dinner. And then if you would, two strangers came and asked me if they could join me. And because I opened up and welcomed them, in spite of the conditions and the circumstances that were around us, I welcomed them to my table and look what opportunities transpired.
Exactly.
I had no idea who Ryan or Miss Kim were. And now look, I'm a guest on a podcast. I never imagined being a guest on anybody's podcast.
It puts people in your lives for a reason.
That's right.
You never whether it be know. A lesson or, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I love your story, Wallace. I'm absolutely in love with it. I'm so proud of you. Not that you need that from me, but I just want to say that to you. Like,
thank you.
I just am in awe of your accomplishments and all that I can see that you still have yet to accomplish. I do want to come and hear you speak. So if you do get that solidified, let us know in April, and I will be there.
Be there. Oh, for sure.
We will stay connected.
I grew up in that church. It's such a small world. I love that we caught you beforehand too, so I knew. So cool.
Exactly. Well, I definitely feel in my heart that we will stay connected. So, you know, at some point, if you're ever up in the Plano area again, you've got my cell phone, text me, we'll meet you, and I will be coherent and sober. Next engagement.
Yes, ma'am. I will definitely be texting you pretty soon. Maybe we can grab lunch or something one Friday or Saturday afternoon. So
I will make myself available to you. So just let me know.
Thank you. And Miss April, it was so nice meeting you.
So nice to meet you too.
Yes. Definitely looking forward. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you,
ladies.
Thank you for coming.
Definitely.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Okay.
Okay. Nope. One second.